music has always stirred us from colonial to modern times, and now the two, history and music, intersect. Historian John Meacham and country music star Tim McGraw have traced our country's history through music in a new book called Songs of America, Patriotism, Protest, and the Music That Made a Nation. They're on a book tour right now with McGraw performing some of the songs they write about. Here now is Lisa Mullins spoke to John Meacham and Tim McGraw, who happen to be neighbors in Nashville, and asked John how this project got started.
Tim asked me a really good question, which was, given the eras of history that I've written about, had I ever thought about the role music played in them? And honestly, I hadn't. And so that was the beginning of this particular journey.
Tim, you write that interwoven in the fabric of our history is music that basically tracks America from the beginning until now. Could you start with the Liberty Song versus
sure.
the Rebels, what we hear in the lyrics of both those songs?
You know, the Liberty Song to me is probably one of the most fascinating songs to me, certainly because it goes back so far. It was written in 1768 by one of our founding fathers, John Dickinson, and it was written 8 years before the Declaration of Independence, and it had a real prescient view of what he thought our country could be and what it could become and what it could mean for future generations, which was incredible. There's a line in that song, our children shall inherit the fruits of our pain.
Come join hand in hand, brave Americans all, and rouse your bold hearts at fair liberty's call. No tyrannous act shall suppress your just claim, or stain with dishonor America's name.
And then the Rebels, it's something that it could really anger you. I mean, the way it was written and what it was talking about and how it described
it taunted,
the colonists.
Taunted
the colonists. So the push and the pull and the rub, it gives you a real reflection on what was going on at the time and how that propelled things forward and how that propelled people to think and take action.
And John, amplify that. I mean, do you hear it any differently as a historian?
I do. I think that the raw materials of history, right, are the letters of an era, the newspapers of an era. I just hadn't thought enough about what was the music they were singing. We talked about the Rebels versus the Liberty mm-hmm. song. You know, 20-25% or so of the country remained loyalist. So that was the division there. You go to the songs of the enslaved. You go to Dixie versus the Battle Hymn of the Republic. There's no more vivid manifestation of what Lincoln called the fiery trial than those two songs.
Let's hear a bit of both, and you can speak to each of these. First, the Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on.
And then there's Dixie.
I wish I was in the land of cotton. Old times there are not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland.
Dixie was written for blackface minstrel singers in New York City. Believe me, we're two white Southerners, and there are a lot of folks who do not know that history. If you understand that Dixie was written for a white guy pretending to be a black man singing nostalgically for enslavement, that puts that song exactly where it should be, which is in a place where it was a manifestation of the worst part of American history, one of the original sins. The original sins of American history are Native American removal and African American slavery. And then the battle hymn is written by Julia Ward Howe in one night. The first time Lincoln heard it, he simply said, sing it again. And I think that you hear the tension, you hear the struggle for liberty, and you hear the Southern struggle to avoid and run away from modernity. You hear all of that in those songs in a way that I find incredibly affecting, not just as a Southerner, but as a historian.
Tim, is Dixie a song that you play or would play?
It was a challenging song to dissect when we decided to put the show together and the book tour together and add music to what we were talking about. It was something that we had to really sit down and figure out how we were going to approach and to challenge. Because, as John said, I'm a Southern white kid who grew up in Louisiana, and I grew up in the middle of cotton fields. Cotton fields were the lifeblood of my community. And as I got older and you hear the more of what the history of the song is, then your head kicks in and your brain kicks in and you clearly realize what that song's about. So it changes your perspective on it for sure. We perform the song in the show, but we do it in a different way. We wanted to attack it in a different way. And Mickey Newberry, who put together a trilogy of Dixie, Battle Hymn of the Republic, and All My Trials, which is an old Bahamian lullaby. And All My Trials at the end really provides a perfect resolution to both of those songs. And that's the way we approach it live.
John, these songs do often represent different political points of view, different Americas. Talk about Happy Days Are Here Again, which became Franklin Roosevelt's theme song.
Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again.
And that totally captures, right, the buoyant optimism, that insistent optimism of FDR. But let's remember, that was the optimism, but that's 1933. Mm-hmm. One out of four American men are out of work. Riots in the Midwest, the Dust Bowl. So the other song that
Brother
represented...
Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Yeah, absolutely, by Bing Crosby, which was about a soldier coming home from war and not being able to eat, not being able to get the things...
In a bread line,
not being able to live the American dream that he fought for.
Let's hear a little bit of that.
They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread?
So songs like that came to represent what was going on in America from different points of view, did they become popular because they were reflecting what was on people's minds, or did they actually change things? I mean, did they spawn some kind of activity and change?
This agency question about to what extent does it reflect and to what extent does it shape? Somebody like John Lewis, so we interviewed him for the book, and Congressman Lewis said he couldn't imagine the civil rights movement without its music, that it wasn't music that made Rosa Parks do what she did on the 1st of December 1955, but that music, once it happened, kept those unimaginably young and brave folks moving through the storms of trying to apply Jefferson's sentence that we are all created equal more fully. And according to Congressman Lewis, the most vivid moment where the powerless intersected with the powerful to move us forward came in March of 1965, when Lyndon Johnson, after the violence at Selma and Bloody Sunday, a week later goes to the Congress and says, "And we shall overcome." And Congressman Lewis describes sitting with Dr. King in a living room in Selma and both of them crying as the mantra of a movement became the mantra of a president.
That mantra, "We shall overcome," has been used for so many different causes, including outside of the United States. Tim, with all your travels outside the U.S., do you see how that happens and how a song like that, and I don't know if it's words or music, can appeal to different populations at different periods of time?
Sure, but I think music throughout can also always be appropriated for different causes and lyrically what it says and the content that the music has. And sometimes, like I said, we don't know that till years later when someone discovers a song and uses it for a different reason.
And one of the things we want to be really clear about is we understand that protest is an inherent part of patriotism.
Sure.
Music celebrates and critiques. And what you see in the music again and again, and I didn't appreciate this until we did this, to be very clear, is there is a soundtrack to our history. There is a soundtrack to our aspirations. Lift Every Voice and Sing is great, one of the great examples, right? Became the anthem of the NAACP, becomes what was called the Negro National Anthem. Marvelous scholarship on this, written by James Weldon Johnson. That has been lifted, not just to lift a heart in a moment, but to lift a country for an age. Mm-hmm. And that's what this great music does.
John Meacham and Tim McGraw. The book is called Songs of America, Patriotism, Protest, and the Music That Made a Nation. So nice to talk to you both. Thank you.
Thank Pleasure. You.
Lift every voice and sing.